This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Advice from a caterpillar. The caterpillar and Alice looked at each other for some time in silence. At last, the caterpillar took the hookah out of its mouth and addressed her in a languid, sleepy voice. "Who are you?" said the caterpillar. This was not an encouraging opening for a conversation. Alice replied rather shyly, I hardly know, sir. Just at present, at least I know who I was when I got up this morning, but I think I must have changed several times since then. What do you mean by that? Said the caterpillar sternly. Explain yourself. I can't explain myself, I'm afraid, sir, said Alice, because I'm not myself, you see. I don't see, said the caterpillar. I'm afraid I can't put it more clearly, Alice replied very politely, for I can't understand it myself to begin with, and being so many different sizes in a day is very confusing. It isn't, said the caterpillar. Well, perhaps you haven't found it so yet, said Alice, but when you have to turn into a chrysalis, you will someday, you know, and then after that into a butterfly, I think you should feel a little queer, won't you? Not a bit, said the caterpillar. Well, perhaps your feelings may be different, said Alice. All I know is it would feel very queer to me. Well, perhaps, oh, you, said the caterpillar contemptuously, who are you? Which brought them back to the very beginning of the conversation. Alice felt a little irritated at the caterpillar making very short remarks, and she drew herself up and said very gravely, I think you ought to tell me who you are first. Why? Said the caterpillar. Here was another puzzling question, and Alice could not think of any good reason. And as the caterpillar seemed to be in a very unpleasant state of mind, she turned away. Come back, said the caterpillar after her. I've something important to say. This sounded promising. Certainly, Alice turned and came back again. Keep your temper, said the caterpillar. Is that all? Said Alice, swallowing down her anger as well as she could. No, said the caterpillar. Alice thought she might as well wait, as she had nothing else to do, and perhaps, after all, they might tell her something worth hearing. For some minutes, he puffed away without speaking, but at last unfolded his arms, took the hookah out of his mouth again, and said, So you think you've changed, do you? I'm afraid I am, sir, said Alice. I can't remember things as I used to, and I don't keep the same size for 10 minutes together. What size do you want to be? He asked. Oh, I'm not particular to size, Alice hastily replied. Only one doesn't like changing so often. You know. I don't know, said the caterpillar. Alice said nothing. She had never been so much contradicted in her life before, and she felt that she was losing her temper. Are you content now? Said the caterpillar. Well, I should like to be a little larger, if you wouldn't mind, sir, said Alice. 3 inches is such a wretched height to be. It's a very good height indeed, as the caterpillar said the caterpillar angrily, rearing itself up as it spoke to exactly its 3-inch height. But I'm not used to it, pleaded poor Alice in a piteous tone, and she thought to herself, I wish the creatures wouldn't be so easily offended. You'll get used to it in time, said the caterpillar, and he put the hookah back into its mouth and began smoking again. This time Alice waited patiently until it chose to speak again. In a minute or two, the caterpillar took the hookah out of its mouth and yawned once or twice and shook itself. Then he got down off the mushroom and crawled away in the grass, merely remarking as it went, "One side will make you taller, and the other side will make you grow shorter." "One side of what? The other side of what?" thought Alice to herself. "Of the mushroom," said the caterpillar, just as if she had asked it aloud, and in another moment was out of sight. Alice remained looking thoughtfully at the mushroom for a minute, trying to make out which were the two sides of it, and it was perfectly round. She found it a very difficult question. However, at last she stretched her arms around it as far as they would go and broke off a bit of each edge with each hand. "And now, which is which?" So, do you ever wake up in the morning and wonder, who am I? Who are you? Look at yourself in the mirror with fascination. This caterpillar is an incredible Zen master with his short little replies. That's kind of how it works. Well, we might just pose that question once in a while. Just let it be a question as we look. Something not yet known from silence, and release any answer. Let go of the image, the roles, my identities. Be curious about what is going to manifest through this body of mine on this new day. So practice, in a sense, is stepping out of the assumed reality of me by understanding what the me is and withdrawing energy from our fixed perceptions. And the Buddha made the realization and the integration of this term anatta, no self, no soul, central to his teaching, that we are without separate existence. This is a fact. But can we be an individual, but not separate from how life is? We find when we wake up, we don't know. Who are we? The same person that went to sleep? And then there's that sleep. And then it's like, will we wake up? And then who wakes up? And sometimes we find we're brilliant and or dull or cranky or calm or open-hearted or closed down. Which one is the real you? Which one's the real me? Which one actually describes me? We might hear ourselves say, I am this or I am that. Just a little bit about this, Alice. As some of you know, I've had a long relationship to Alice in Wonderland. Since I was a child, I collected as many books as I could find on Alice in Wonderland. And I had from Cracker Jack size to very oversized books. And she was a kind of heroine to me, especially that part where she can just fall through that rabbit hole without grabbing anything, and she's still looking around. I'm like, okay, I like that. Like, can I just fall through the rabbit hole and look around without grabbing? And how to do that? And so I used to be quite a flea marketer too. And when I was practicing before I got to the monastery, and when I was introduced to the monastery from some people who had been there, it was always a big choice for me if I should go to the flea market or Sunday service. Because as an artist, I got a lot of my stuff at the flea market, you know? So it was kind of like my religion. I liked the people there, and it was like I had this kind of liturgy of going around and touching objects and things. And I found, one time I went and I found a copy of Alice in Wonderland from the year I was born. And it was a bit old, and the binding, the glue had come out, so the pages weren't connected to the inside binder. It was a hardback, and the pages slid out, and the one that came forward was the cartoon of the illustration of the caterpillar on the mushroom, and the line underneath said, "Who are you?" And I started weeping because I was like, you know, just getting introduced to Zen, and this, I didn't know, like, did I know? I thought I knew, and I was just, and then this pops out, and I just was like in one of those moods where it's like, oh my God, the universe just sent me this message. And the person at the booth was like, take it, you can have it. You know, I was, you didn't break it, it's okay. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I still have it, I still have it. Yeah, that's the only one I kept, actually. And then I came to the monastery, and Dido's first talk that I heard that Sunday is Alice in Wonderland and the Mushroom. And I was like, oh my God, again? And then I went to him, and he said, you know, why are you here? And I was like, oh God, here it goes. Well, I thought I was doing the same thing. And in the prologue to his koan, he says, "The very body and mind of all beings is as great and boundless as the universe itself. As for how small it is finer than a single atom. We should understand that holding on and letting go are not another's doing. Rolling up and rolling out are both within one's own power. If you want to free what is stuck and loosen what is bound, simply remove all traces of mental activity." So he's giving us a pointer there, how to release what's stuck, loosen what is bound. Simply remove all traces of mental activity. At this very moment, if one's vision and hearing are clear and color and sound are purely perceived, tell me, which side is the right side? This side doesn't reach it. That side doesn't reach it. Neither this nor that misses it. Both this and that are 10,000 miles away from the truth. Avoid the slightest trace of right and wrong and say a word. I also got to play the caterpillar in a play. I had a great outfit made of wire and a green chamois that stretched over it. So I had all the ribs and everything. And I just remember my brother called me a grub the entire summer. So which is which? So he's saying, in a sense, being undivided is an expression of our true nature. What is it to be undivided? It has nothing to do with being a saint or being perfect. And yet, I think we've all had a glimpse, why we practice, we've had a glimpse of not two, right? Like sometime in our life, we have felt this unification with everything. It breaks through. Every person has this awareness that's running through us and these openings that come to us. It's undeniable. And it doesn't mean that at any particular moment we'll never experience division again. It will dissipate. But it shows us something. It shows us who we are in a real sense, that little opening. And to be free is to actually let go of the concern of how awake we are or not, or whether we had something or we lost something. Some of us get hung up there. I had that feeling of not being separated. I want it back. I lost it. One of the great poems in our tradition is the Teaching in the Faith Mind poem from Setsang, the third ancestor. He says, "The great way is not difficult. Only avoid picking and choosing. When love and hate are both absent, the way is clear and undisguised." And then at the end, he finished with this description of the awakened state, to be without anxiety about imperfection. To be without anxiety about imperfection. So to be undivided doesn't mean to be perfect. Rather, it's to not conform to the images we have in our mind about perfection, about what a holy is, or a holy person. Maybe it's like dying, in a sense, to just how ordinary we are. How much we want to relax into non-anxiety. Not trying to be other than we are, or another. We see somebody who is a Buddha, the Buddha, Christ, and we want to be them. But we can't be them. They're them, we're us. But there's virtues we can admire, which that's what we resonate with within ourself. But I think we're terrified of being that ourselves, being a divine being ourself. And so we try to be like them. And that takes us further away. And that instinct, I think, is part of each one of us, that we say, you know, why can't I just be myself? We want this freely, easily, smoothly, unselfconsciously, unapologetically. So this non-separation is something we each discover and recover and reclaim for ourselves, to see what is beyond love and hate, what is beyond good and evil, right and wrong, open, fearful. In any given moment, are we experiencing and acting from division or from oneness? Which side is it? Which is which? So Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree, and in a sense we could say his caterpillar was Mara, or that caterpillar in us, Mara, that aspect of us that wants to question or turn us away from what we know to be true or feel or intuit. And Mara says to Buddha, "Who are you? By whose authority do you take that Bodhi seat? What right do you have to sit in that seat that you're sitting on?" And Buddha touches the earth, touches the ground of being. "This is my witness. This is my witness." And he sat down in that moment in his aloneness, not trying to be like someone or something else, or trying to control his life, just being. He sat down just being completely true to his own yearning, his own search. And as we know, it took him a long time and a lot of spiritual practice to purge hundreds of generations of conditioning out of his system so he could finally sit under that tree, just like we are. He can finally embody his aloneness. What would it be like to relieve ourselves of this immensity of human conditioning? And of course, some conditioning is useful. If it wasn't for conditioning, we wouldn't be here. Our hearts wouldn't be beating. They're conditioned to do this. Our blood flows. Our breath moves without management. Our eyes blink. This is the conditioning of our biology. Yunin could tell you that. Over millions of years, it's evolved. So mostly it's automatic. So what we're dealing with is more of a psychological conditioning. And once it gets into our system, we become afraid of our own aloneness, mostly because it's so unimaginably unknown. Who would we be if somehow all the unnecessary psychological conditioning was to drop out of our system? Oh my God. Alice was onto it. This is what we often see in our continuous practice, a glimpse. And then how we fall back into a dream. It's unimaginable until it happens. But something like this is exactly what happens to anybody when we rediscover who we are. We can wake up from our form, from our humanity, from our body and mind. We can literally wake up and out of all of our identifications, our grasping onto form and memory, all of it right down through our gender, through our genetics, through our race. It's not because they don't exist, they do. But they don't actually define our essential being. This is what the Buddha offered. We can have this wonderful waking up out of all of that uneasiness and feel the great freedom, the inherent feeling of truthfulness about it all. And when this happens, it's self-confirming. It's one half of awakening. This one kind of freedom. We can wake up and still have many limiting impulses happening in the body and mind that we just woke up from. So there's another side of awakening, which isn't just waking up from form, from body, from identification of the mind. It's getting that wakefulness down and through every cell, through all of this form, body, mind identification, a major clearinghouse. It's not just waking up for the body and mind, but waking up all through it. Dogen says, hearing sounds, seeing forms with the whole body, mind, one understands intimately. Through and through, through and through. So in order to really do this, I think there has to be a deep embrace of our aloneness. Maybe this is not really how we conventionally think of aloneness, where we associate it with loneliness. We can contemplate it in a quiet way. That starts us as a kind of intuitive process of really letting ourselves embody our aloneness. And this works really good if we're staying in the process of inquiry and curiosity. I speak to a lot of you about that, which I think has been pounded out of us, to not inquire or be curious about what's happening. We get anxiety about imperfection, and we lose the fluidity of who we are. And then we miss that aloneness required to take it completely through. So in a practice life, inquiry is one of the most skillful, best means we use to really loosen our rigidity, our hardening of beliefs, opinions, and ideas. Just that turning of like, interesting. Like turn it into curiosity and not get so bogged in what's happening. It's not easy because that has been so pulled out of us to turn in that particular way. But that opens up so much fluidity. Where we get held up is finding an identity in the point of view and then being attached to that point of view, becoming a rock and a world that only works in fluids. Life is fluid. Would you agree? Are you curious? Or does it feel like a rock? It can feel like a rock, but it's fluid. Even rocks are fluid. Rocks are moving. Mountains are moving. Tables are moving. Floors are moving. It's changing. Only one doesn't like changing so often, you know, as Alice says. If we didn't derive identity through our ideas, beliefs, opinions, and points of view, then we would be fluid. We wouldn't be threatened if someone disagreed with us. Can you imagine? I think you ought to tell me who you are first. Why, said the caterpillar. Keep your temper, she says, as she turned away from his challenge. With inquiry of body, mind, gut, we begin to see and experience we be a non-separate individual. We can see we're actually unified. So if that's gone, we might have a glimpse of that non-separateness. All at the ground of being is a sameness. We hear this all the time in the teachings. Interconnectedness, interdependence. All people, all life. As Buddha said when he saw the morning star upon awakening, all sentient beings, this great earth and I, have at once attained the way. That's what he's speaking about. You see that? So why does the caterpillar only speak in halves? Does reaching everywhere include them both? Same and difference, sameness and difference, all at once? When we look at a tree, a cloud, the sky, a person, we see all its various forms of life. And these forms, each one of them is totally unique. They're individual without being separate from life. Their individuality, their uniqueness doesn't separate them. Dida used to say, you and I are the same thing, but I'm not you and you're not me. And those exist mutually arising, mutually dependent, coexistent. You can't have one without the other. That's the unity. It's not like one side or the other side of a coin. It's a coin. It's all there. One mushroom. Their individuality, their uniqueness doesn't separate them. It doesn't confer otherness upon them. It's just what life does. It's unique in all its expressions. And this is what we feel as the desire to be free. So I think at first we want to be free from ourselves to some extent, but there's also the instinct to be free from within ourselves. And I hope what we're all doing here is to find our unity, but also to find the way that unity shows upon what is called our life. To let go into that aloneness enough to find it. Reality is neither dualistic nor non-dualistic, neither spiritual nor non-spiritual. To let ourselves come to know that there is more sacredness in a blade of grass, a tree in Brooklyn, than all of our thoughts and ideas about reality. When we perceive from an undivided consciousness, we will find the sacred in every expression of life. Every single thing is just startling. Startling in its being, in its suchness, just as it is. Every single thing. We find it in a teacup, in the cold air, in brushing our teeth, in every moment of living and dying. To leave the collection of unconditioned thought behind, to let ourselves be led by the inner thread of silence into the unknown, to that place we go innocently, or not at all, not once, but it's continuous. Albert Einstein is known for this quote where he says, "A human being is part of the whole called by us the universe." This is Albert, way back. "A part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical illusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and affection for a few persons near to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening the circle of understanding and compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty." One day I came across these lines in Zenki, which is a fascicle in Shobo Genzo by Master Dogen called Undivided Activity. Dogen writes, "Birth is just like riding a boat. You raise the sails, row with the oar, and steer. Although you row, the boat gives you a ride. And without the boat, you couldn't ride. But you ride in a boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. When you ride in a boat, your body and mind and the environs together are the undivided activity of the boat. The entire earth and the entire sky are both the undivided activity of the boat." I don't know, that kind of blew me away. I think it's an amazing image. Your writing makes the boat what it is. Such a positive vision. Such a deep trust in action. And we can feel it in this time of facing the enormity of the problems in our world and how we can become cynical and doubting that any individual action can make an impact. And we give up. And Dogen's view of the power of each individual action can be a driving force in challenging our cynicism and doubting. Finding your writing makes the boat what it is. Daita Roshi's capping verse says, rather than free the body, free the mind. When the mind is at peace, the body is at peace. And body and mind are both set free, the way is clear and undisguised. One side of what? One side will make you grow taller, and the other side will make you grow shorter. One side of what? The other side of what? Of the mushroom. Alice remained looking thoughtfully at the mushroom for a minute, trying to make out which were the two sides of it, and it was perfectly round. She found this a very difficult question. Don't you? So if we stretch our arms around anything as far as they will grow and break off a bit of the edge with each hand, each bit contains the whole universe. Anything we break off, anything we pick up, it's all there. Now, which is which?
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JIZOPROJECT.